Welcome, dear seekers of health, happiness, and harmonious cosmic humming, to season two of the Pebble in the Cosmic Pond. I am Sabina Wilms, owner of Happy Goat Productions, in collaboration with Leo Locke, self-proclaimed purveyor of multiple perspectives. Once again, we're here to bring you old and new stories about China's healing traditions and about medicine in heaven and on earth and in the sweet spot in between. In our special twist for season two, we feature second generation immigrant Asian women's voices on female health. And yes, that's a mouthful. We explore the creative sweet spot between the traditional Asian kitchen table wisdom on women's health that our interviewees have inherited from their mothers and aunties, and their personal and professional experiences in contemporary America. Before we get into interviewing these women in our official episodes, here's a little introductory chat where Leo and I explore this topic and some of questions like this. Where does traditional women's knowledge on female health come from, and how is it transmitted? How is it reflected, if at all, in the traditional literature of Chinese medicine, which was written largely by and for men? How do we plug the gaping holes in the male-dominated traditional literature as modern providers of medical education and medical care by and for women? Whether in the context of advanced clinical practice or just daily yangsheng, how can we make space for the female perspective of the nurturer versus the technician? Before we get into the conversation, I'd like to remind you to check out the show notes for our episode, to sign up for my newsletter at happygoatproductions.com/connect, to learn more about my website, traditionalchinesegynecology.com, and to find links for my books, Channeling the Moon, Parts 1 and 2, and other resources like Leo Locke's courses. And lastly, please rate, review, and share this podcast wherever you can. We do want this message to get out there to the general public, and we really hope that you can help us make that happen. Thank you, and now enjoy listening. Okay. Hi, Leo. We're Hello. Here once again, and it's just the two of us, which is sometimes nice for a change. I would like for us to talk a little bit about our season two, to share with our listeners what it is that we're doing. And, you know, I've been noodling around every time I explain to our invited interviewees what we're about. It gets a little bit clearer, but I want your help in really crystallizing what it is that we're doing with this season. All I know is every time we're interviewing one of our guests, it's just so exciting, and it's so rich and inspiring. And I think the three of us walk away from every conversation feeling like, oh, we got to do more of this. So the biggest question that we've been having, you and me, a conversation about is the title. And I started out with something like, "What do you remember what the title was where you said, oh, that's too academic?
Something like by, for, to women or something like that.
Something about, yeah, female voices, the embodiment of voices by, about, for women, blah, blah, blah. And then you came up with a much nicer title, which was, do you remember?
I think it was something like carrying our grandmas or in our womb or something. Carrying grandma in your womb or something like that.
That's right. So I liked that. And I was like, now it's not quite perfect, but it was a very different direction. So that was a good course correction. And then I sat on it and I sat on it. And, you know, I was like channeling the moon. I got that in my book title. And then I was looking at the moon and I've been thinking a lot about my daughter, because what we're talking about is immigrant women. We've been interviewing immigrant Asian women in the way they make sense of their of the knowledge about female health and female bodies that they have received from their mothers and grandmothers, the oral, the kitchen wisdom, that's where your grandma came in, the grandma, and how that wisdom interacts creatively and transforms in interaction with their life, their lives, their activities, personal, their experiences, personal and professional, as somehow involved in healthcare for women in contemporary America. So I love my daughter, and I am very much struggling with the fact that she's American and I'm German. And you and I are both first generation immigrants. You're from Malaysia, I'm from Germany. And when it comes to something like menstruation or breastfeeding, or the way, you know, when I think about the way, yeah, my entire family was so strict. They were so upset that I would not let my daughter cry it out when she was a little baby, that I fed her on demand. My parents, everybody in my family, they're all doctors, and they were like, this is wrong. You have to breastfeed on demand. So, and I don't know how much of that is, you know, Nazi ideology that has come down, that has become part of this grandma wisdom. Where does this kind of knowledge, where do these kinds of thoughts come from? And of course, my daughter and I, we read a kid's book a lot when she was little that was something like, I love you all the way to the moon and back. So we always play with all the way over to the moon. I send her like postcards with the moon on it, and she knows what that is. So I came up with over the moon ? And you approved.
Yes.
So, you know, we're talking about the moon. We're talking about cycles. We're talking about women's relationship with the natural environment. Yeah, like one of the interviews we've had was all about with Chris Gonzalez was all about the cycles and aligning the cycles, the female cycles, the menstrual cycle with the cycle of the sevens, the cycle, the development, the cycle of aging with the seasonal cycles and the cycles of life and the cycles in the macrocosm. So there is cycles, there's the... Yeah, you want to take over. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Where there's a lot going on, and I feel like we're kind of narrowing it down.
Mm-hmm. And I feel for me, one of the most important thing is to have a space, very safe and welcoming space, to encourage the voices of women in healthcare, and in particular, women's health. I think that is one of the other things that we want to foster in our season too. Yeah, because a lot of times we find that the discussion of healthcare seems to sometimes, even in Chinese medicine, can be dominated by the male perspective.
Yes.
And the male voices.
Yes.
There's, you know, a lot of the books, the medical books were written by males, and a lot of the contemporary teachers in the West are male as well.
It's even changing. Though, it's really, yeah. I feel like, and that was kind of the irony when, like, 20 years ago when I first started teaching, a lot of the teachers, like most of the teachers, were the leading teachers, the experts, the authorities, were male. And yet most of the students, a majority of the students, the future practitioners, were female. And yeah. They're also a majority of the patients are female, right? Because women in our culture mm-hmm. are more likely to go to a doctor, to an alternative health provider, whatever you want to call it, than men are. So there was this weird mismatch between the experts being the men, and I think now it's changed because a lot of that, maybe the second generation of Western practitioners of Chinese medicine are now stepping into the role of experts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, I think what another thing that we'll like to bring forth is more of the nurturer,
ooh.
The archetype of the nurturer, right? Because in the transmission
yes.
of Chinese medicine, through the intellectual way, through the books, there is a tendency to cluster around a technical expert, a technician.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the nurturing aspect of things are lost or de-emphasized.
And this is so wild when you think about Yangsheng. Like, what is the traditional female perspective on Yangsheng?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do we really have in terms of women's voices? Because there's one article that I edited once years ago for Sean Lei, the medical historian from Taiwan. And mm-hmm. it was about this Chinese doctor, and I forgot her name. Are you aware of this? She is, what's her name? I forgot. I mentioned her before to you, and it didn't ring any bells.
Okay, we can include that in the notes.
Yeah, she yeah. was a biomedical doctor, and she was trained in Japan. And she was a normal biomedical doctor, and then she came back, and she realized that healthcare starts in the kitchen. And she developed this medical practice that really incorporated the traditional Chinese medicine wisdom of dietetics and these different body types and different diets for different body types. And women are the ones, and she was a complete contradiction because she was culturally very conservative and she was advocating women's roles as the not just the primary caregivers in raising the kids and taking care of the older, but she was emphasizing how women are responsible for the health. Women are the primary healthcare providers because they're in the kitchen. And at the same time, she was this hardcore biomedical doctor who left her children to go and pursue her career. So she my friend, Professor Lei, he interviewed her and wrote a really fascinating article about this tension in her professional life and her personal life. But her biggest contribution, which I thought was really interesting, was the importance of women as healthcare providers through their role as cooks. And that's something that we see now because now women get to be experts, but women, that was not a choice for most women, you know, until 100 years ago, 50 years ago, because women took care of the children and the elderly. unless, you know, the women, unless they were old, where the women had left the house and then, you know, women became Buddhist nuns or Taoist nuns. But in terms of being the ones to cook. And the other thing for me that I thought was really interesting in our interviews, and that's what I've noticed with other of my students who are of Asian descent, is that they look to the texts and they look to their, they sometimes don't connect the dots between the wisdom of their mothers and grandmothers and what they're doing in their professional practice. Mm-hmm. What they're learning in clinic and what they're learning from the male-dominated experts, or maybe they now have female teachers, but it's still male knowledge because whatever, historically, it's mostly been written down by men. It's such a different view. And I think you are really interested
in that. I totally see that. And I've seen it before. And that's one of my own passions, if we will, is to having the ability to explain the cultural practices, the traditional practices in the kitchen and in the household through the eyes of the medical framework.
Do you have an example of something that you learned from your relatives?
Yeah, it's very, like for my mother. My mother was the prime example of that, right? I think I mentioned before that she would tell us about how she felt after, you know, if a relative gave her a dish to try out. It's like, oh, something with, say, pickle vegetables. You know, those sour pickle vegetables or mustards, pickled mustards, right? And then she would say, oh, after I ate it, I felt like there's a tinge and a discomfort in my left lower abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's too cold for my body. Right? So there are many examples of that where she would report, my late mother would report on the felt sensations in her body in reaction to food consumed.
And that is not a sensitivity that in Western culture would be encouraged in a man, right? Like women, culturally, it's okay for women to, I mean, maybe I'm totally overgeneralizing here. And of course, now we have a culture where it's like people are all over the place. And that's that's very liberating.
So traditional, in traditional families, Chinese families, I would say that would be more of the domain of the mother, of the female. Yeah.
Rather than men usually don't. Embodiment?
Yeah, that sense of embodiment would be more prevalent and encouraged in female than males. Because males will just eat and then go to work, right?
And they tough it out, right? I mean, that's the German thing. It's like you just tough it out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So my mother was also unique among the females of her family. I think among all of them, she's the one that is the most sensitive. Yeah. And perhaps she had that affinity in her, you know, she resonated with my grand uncle, who was a physician back in China, and then they emigrated to Malaysia.
Yeah.
And she remembered and shared with us many of his teachings.
Yeah.
I don't think all my aunties are that way. I think among all my aunties or the females in the family, my mother, my late mother, was probably the most aligned with those knowledge and a line of sensitivity, right? Which means it is not a completely or a complete domain reserved for the females either. The male physicians were also sensitive to these type of influences. The reason we don't hear much about them is that type of literature and that type of lineages are usually not the one that is featured in our contemporary teachings and transmission or seminars and things like that, right? Yeah. And then there's a revival. I talked about that. Dr. Xu Wenbing from Beijing, you know, about 15 years. Is it 15 years or even like eight? Back in the 2000s, 2006, 2005, 2006, he was the one who was interviewed on national radio, you know, with maybe hundreds of millions of Chinese audience at any one episode, talking about these fundamental things about Chinese medicine in our daily living moment, you know, from fuel to oil to water, you know, that kind of thing. So there is definitely the lineage that's known and carried among the male physicians. It's just that they didn't have a platform. They didn't have a place to speak about them to the masses before that.
I wonder if there's something about expert knowledge that if you make it complicated, it gives you more prestige. Whereas, you know, what I love about so much of the classics, or like Sun Tzu Miao, a lot of the advice in, for example, in the pediatrics, it's really, really simple. It's very much common sense, but you don't get the same amount of respect. Mm-hmm. And Sun Tzu Miao's, actually, the Tianjin Fang was written as it was written for the male, the head of the household, to prepare for Beiji, to prepare for emergencies. So it wasn't written for medical professionals. It was written as a sort of what would be the modern equivalent, like a
the head of household.
No, I mean the like you Google something where like MedWeb or something, right? Those websites where you can figure out if you have a cold or how you can distinguish, I don't know, this condition from that. If you're just a regular person, you're trying to find medical information to take care of your family. That was the purpose of that book. So that's very different from like Song Dynasty formula collections.
I think there has always been different kinds of literature.
Yeah.
There have always been different kind of paralleled transmissions within a society and even within a household. Because there is the one that is shared by the females, right? Through the oral transmissions and practices. And some of them are collected in the literature and some are not. And then it's not clear cut. It's not like this is male knowledge and this is female knowledge. They're fluid. The intertransmission is fluid. And some of the female knowledge is collected in the books. Yeah, so it really depends on what kind of books you have access to, what kind of lineage you have.
And it's right? And example, it's hard to kind of trace the voices. But, you know, so just thinking about the Yangsheng, because I can't wait to get back to that chapter on Sun Tzu Miao for my translation project. And that strikes me. So there's a whole volume on Yangxing, on nurturing the inner nature, but it's about the pursuit of immortality practices, dietetics, sleep hygiene, not overworking, not overthinking, not overtaxing the body, a little bit of like Taoyin practices, that kind of thing. That is a male. I'm just thinking about this now. That strikes me as a male perspective. I don't see anything about the female body.
Yeah, just think about it. As somebody who is quite familiar with pre-modern literature in China, how much of it is actually written for women, Yeah. And how much of it is written by women? Not even 1%,
right?
Nothing,
yeah.
Not even.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's I think one of the major, I think, motivation for us, isn't it, for season two?
I know.
Is that we would like to rebalance that emphasis to bring out the contemporary voices of female in connection with their traditional transmission and see where the textual information and the textual and the oral transmission come together, where they overlap.
Because the textual transmission has this huge lack. There's a huge, so how do we fill that? Or how mm-hmm. I think that's maybe the question that we're asking, that we're noodling around with our interviewees, because they are women, and all the ones we've interviewed so far are interested in teaching fellow practitioners or patients how to mm-hmm. take better care of their female bodies. And
yeah.
There is a lack in what they've received through the institution, through the institutional, yeah. through the expert knowledge. So how do they plug this hole?
Yeah, and the lack is not a lack in medical principles,
mm-hmm.
nor a lack in medical experience,
mm-hmm.
but the lack of the female perspective, the female approach,
yeah.
the female language.
Yeah.
I think that's where the lack yeah. is. The principles we have had it all along.
Absolutely.
Right? And it was yeah. well practiced and well verified.
Yeah.
But that's from the male perspective. Yeah. It doesn't mean that if it is from the male perspective, it is not effective. But now we're into sort of trying to at a larger level, educate the public, educate our fellow female practitioners how to popularize this knowledge so that it's not contained only within the medical professionals, but how much of it can be liberated into the public so that every household, every mother, every daughter can benefit from it as well.
Oh man, gender is such a thorny issue, you know? So we're like, we're putting our foot in our mouth a little bit.
Yeah, tell us more about what you're feeling there.
Well, I feel like what's going on right now, I mean, yes, I want to be an advocate of classical Chinese medicine, and I always tell my students about how beautiful classical Chinese philosophy and medicine and cosmology is, because instead of buying into this paradigm of progress, of evolution, of, oh, we are better than our ancestors, what traditional Chinese culture does is we look backwards at the wisdom of the ancients, because we... In my perspective, it's very arrogant to think that we moderns are like more advanced than people in the Han Dynasty. I think the traditional Chinese way, and that's what I tell my students, is the traditional Chinese way of looking at this situation was the ancient sages, they had it figured out. They were enlightened. They were in tune with the Tao. They were playing with yin and yang, and they were in alignment with the four seasons and the Tao in a way that we have lost in contemporary times. So I'm always advocating for this way, but at the same time, I feel like we are in this place right now of a unique... Every age, every generation has a potential for a creative process. We have a coming together of different paradigms of biomedicine, of science, and then we have the traditional Chinese paradigm, and then we have, now there is an ability for practitioners of where gender has been removed from the equation. So gender is no longer holding half the population, stopping half the population from becoming medical experts.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter whether you are male or female or anything else. You can take care of bodies. And at the same time, so that's wonderful. You know, we can remove the limitations of gender. But at the same time, we don't want to. The way the limitations of gender have been removed from biomedicine and from Chinese medicine, I would argue, in the past,
yes,
at least the way it is being taught now, has been you just privilege the male gaze. You look at the male body as the standard. And instead, what we are saying is, let's look at the female body. How can we take care of the female body?
Yes, and also, but that has always been the gaze of Chinese medicine, sort of for the last 2,000 years. But what we're doing is even one step further than that. It's looking at the female body and taking care of the female's health from the female perspective and the female way of doing it.
And that's
in the modern world. Yeah, I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
Because, we are experts. We have been experts at taking care of the female bodies for 2,000 years.
In a way that, that's how we started out, that Chinese medicine has things to contribute for women's health that biomedicine lacks, because the Chinese view of the body has always been, in my perspective, and Charlotte Firth was one of my doctoral advisors, and she had this expression of the Yellow Emperor's body, which was one that was not male or female. It was an androgynous body. And the body was seen on a yin and yang, physiological, functional continuum. And there are so many factors that influence yin and yang beyond just male and female. Male and female is just one factor. You have young and old, you have active, passive, you have north versus south, warm versus cold. There are a million things that affect whether you're a yin or a yang, the balance of yin and yang in every female, in every human body. So Charlotte Firth we owe her a great debt of gratitude for spelling that out. And I think that's true. And because of that, Chinese medicine has cared for female bodies. And of course, because Chinese culture, if you want to be cynical, it was hugely important to have male offspring, the continuation of the family lineage. So it was hugely important that you took care of women, because women are the foundation of the family, of health and the family, in a way that maybe biomedicine doesn't, because biomedicine is much more where the female body is a deviate, the male body is the model and the female body is a deviation, and female bodies are weak and hysterical because they have a uterus, that etymological connection between hysterical, that's the uterus. Women have uteruses, so they're emotional, they're weak, they can't be trusted, they go crazy if they're not, you know, if they're not having babies, and that's why they don't get to vote and all of these other things. And that's why hysterectomies were so common for women who were too emotional. So that's kind of the medical historian perspective about how really biomedicine has a awful track record at treating female bodies. And Chinese medicine is, in my perspective, vastly superior at there. It's just such an, I think we agree on that, right? It's such an untapped, there's such a huge untapped potential when it comes to fertility, when it comes to menstrual problems, postpartum, taking care of the woman postpartum. Just, you know, when you think about fertility, everybody cares about the baby. But who asks when women give birth at the age of 45 or 50. I mean, what is now, like, there are a lot of older women giving birth through fertility treatments. Who keeps track of what these women who then go, you know, who go through a pregnancy that their body is really too weak, unprepared to hold that pregnancy, and we use biomedicine and it's all wonderful. But what does that do to the female body 20 years, 30 years down the line? We don't know that quite yet, because fertility mm-hmm. is such a new technology. And I feel like in our Western, I don't want to romanticize traditional Chinese culture by any means, but I feel like there's such an emphasis on the baby and not on the mother. And to me, that, I mean, correct me if I'm romanticizing Chinese medicine, but to me, there is so much more of an emphasis on maternal health in traditional mm-hmm. Chinese gynecology than in biomedicine.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to keep my politics out of here, out of the conversation.
Yeah. And that is why we're doing season two. We're interviewing all these female practitioners who are in their own magical ways, very different ways, that will start to address those issues that you just mentioned, those aspects and dimensions of care for women's health way beyond the imagination of modern biomedicine.
And they're so powerful. I feel like every interview we've had so far, there's so much potential, and every one of them does this incredible work where it truly is the pebble in the pond. It feels like your bodhisattva math expression. I feel like every one of them is aiming to do something small and subtle that has huge ripple effects through society with pretty simple things. There's just so much potential. So that's why Over the Moon was my, you know, that was my thing. And note the question mark, because I'm like, we can use it in English for I'm over the moon. It's like we are over the moon. We are, you and I are, and I think our interviewees are, about the potential of traditional Chinese gynecology. And then we've just been talking about the kind of the clinical knowledge, the written knowledge, but then you add to that the gems from their Asian mothers and aunties and grannies' wisdom, and putting that together, it's like alchemy. It's really mm-hmm. miraculous what each of them, how they're putting it together. So I'm like over the moon. I think you and I are over the moon about the possibility. And then the question mark is like, are we over this? Because they are, I know for my daughter and her experience, and for me, and I don't know, no, you seem to be very much at peace with your tradition. Whereas when I left my country and my culture at 18, I wanted to get as far away from Germany. It was about rejecting Germany. I went to Taiwan, then I came here, and it was about rejecting where I came from. And I've since grown up, and I've learned to change that. But there is this attempt, I think, with the first generation of immigrants, they are traditional, but they try to adapt to the dominant culture in America. And that is certainly true for me. I want to fit in. Maybe I'm different because I chose to come here. It wasn't war trauma or it wasn't a horrific thing that forced me to come here. And I could see if you come from a culture where you were, for whatever reason, you ended up here after a lot of trauma, it would be a different experience. But still, the first generation, my daughter is interested in She's American. She's clearly American. But her relationship to the German traditional knowledge is very different from mine. So is she over the moon as in, oh, I'm over that, Mom. That's like, that's weird superstition. You know, like this idea in Chinese culture that you have to, you know, you can't wash your hair when you're menstruating, or you have to wear shoes. You can't be barefoot on tile floor. It's like that's superstition, or just you know, sitting out the month, postpartum restrictions. That's old fashioned. So are we over the moon about embracing that traditional knowledge, or are we just over it? That's where that came from. Anyway,
well let's find out. Season two.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of our podcast, Pebble in the Cosmic Pond. As a new experiment in our season two on Over the Moon, because we so love these conversations, we have decided to release new episodes not only on the new moon, but from here on out on a bi-weekly schedule. So on the new and on the full moon. We'll see if we can keep it going. The full moon episodes used to just be for the members of my Imperial Tutor Mentorship, but we all feel like this information is too precious to not share it with the general public. If you enjoyed this conversation, remember to subscribe to my newsletter at happygoatproductions.com/connect to get notified of future episodes and other offerings. And if you want access to the more specialized and truly nerdy conversations that Leo and I are having in the Imperial Tutorial, please take a look at my Imperial Tutor Mentorship, which you can find at my website at happygoatproductions.com/imperialtutor. Also, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and share our work with your friends and colleagues. And if you feel like it, continue the conversation for each episode on our Pebble in a Cosmic Pond Facebook group. Last, but definitely not least, go out there and spread some positive vibrations between heaven and earth. Goodbye.